Yeah, with eggs.
But do you? Does anyone know matzah brine?
Yes.
Yeah, I think some of us probably even had that for breakfast a couple times this last week.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing, is having matzah brine for breakfast.
Cool.
And I thoroughly enjoyed that. Now, they brought chicken, and I'm sure it wasn't a kosher chicken, but
okay.
How many places I can get kosher chicken in Harrodsburg.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing those highlights. Anybody, if you're interested, I have an unopened box of matzo left. So, unless I just eat it over the upcoming weeks, you know, you can come have it. All right, I want to share a Passover-themed homily here that is going to explore the impact, in one way, the real strength, the power, the transformation that the Passover had on Israel. And so we're in the book of Exodus. Actually, Passover changes so many things. On one level, it really changed everything. I was reading this past week, there's kind of a pop Jewish culture writer, introductory Jewish writer named Kushner. And I was reading a book and he made this statement that really Passover is the beginning of everything. Passover is certainly, he said, the beginning of Judaism, as he put it in the language that he was expressing. And in many ways, it is, and there are many things that flow out of it. And I want to just touch on some of the story and beauty that flows from the Passover experience. I want to start by setting context. At the end of Genesis, Joseph is on in a position of leadership, governing in Egypt. He is in charge of the food distribution program, and through an amazing miracles of God, Joseph is joyfully reunited with his brothers, and all of Jacob's descendants end up moving to Egypt. There is a time that Joseph is revered and honored, and we know that because in Exodus it tells us that there was a leaders that came to power who did not know of Joseph. So at some point Joseph had been honored, but there was a change in culture that the gifts, the support, the role of previous generations had been forgotten or expunged from culture. This led to the entrapment and even national genocide of the Israelis. At one point, Pharaoh declares open season on Israel. And as as Rod beautifully pointed out so many things last week, there was a sense in which the people cried out. And I like the way that Rod states that it doesn't say they cry out to God. It just says they cried out. But God heard, and God remembered, and God saw. And he brings a redeemer. The redeemer is born. We have to wait what we find out elsewhere in the Bible. We have to wait another 80 years. So multiple generations have gone by. And finally, Moses returns to Egypt and he gives that famous statement, "Let my people go." The rest of that line says, "so that they may serve me." That is in distinction to serving Pharaoh, right? "Let my people go." And he comes and he delivers the message to Israel. And in Exodus chapter 4, in verse 30, it states, "Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses, and he performed the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and they heard that the Lord had remembered Israel, and that he saw their affliction, and they bowed their heads, and they worshipped," or they prostrated themselves. That verb literally means to bow, but it also carries the idea of worship. Worship has a body style to it. However, Moses then goes to Pharaoh, and he takes the message to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is not so joyful at hearing this message, and he decides that he's going to make not only to not release Israel, he's going to increase the temperature. He's going to turn up the struggle. And it says in verse 12 of chapter 5, "So the people spread out through the entire land of Egypt to gather the gleanings for the straw that they were now responsible for collecting in order to construct the building projects that they had been conscripted to build. It says the taskmasters pressed, saying, 'Complete your work, the daily matter each day, as when there was straw.'" In other words, the weight had not changed. Instead, it increased. This is the last time for several chapters that the people of Israel are mentioned. We kind of leave off here at this point. Israel is simply out collecting their straw. And Israel is finding themselves bent over. The phrase in Hebrew is that they have a kotzer ruach. They have shortness of spirit. Their spirit is diminished. They have shortness of breath. That word for shortness there in modern Hebrew is related to the word for asthma in modern Hebrew. It gets toward the idea of the shortness of breath. It's like they had asthma of the spirit. and shriveled and diminished and short and weak. And so there the people are left. We know the story about the plagues and Moses interacting with Pharaoh. God telling Moses what to do, and Moses going out and stretching out his rod over the land, and the plagues coming, and then at certain times Pharaoh begs Moses to take the plagues away. God's mercy pours out and the plagues are removed. And then Pharaoh is comfortable again and fails to follow through on repentance. What are the people doing during this time? It's interesting that nowhere through the plagues does it tell us in the storyline what the people are doing. They're simply left off in the story. Chapter 5, verse 12 is the last time that the narrator mentions them. And it simply says, they're scattered, looking for straw. They're scattered, looking for straw. What is going to bring them back together? What is going to revive worship? When will it be that they once again bow and prostrate to the Lord? What will cause worship to be renewed? Really, in our own cases and in some of the situations even that we've voiced here today and in our concerns for others, our concerns for ourselves, it's like we recognize that there can be in our lives, in our culture, in our land, in our country. We've mentioned Israel, who just last week came through, not this week, but the previous week, came through another round of elections. There can be asthma of the spirit, where there's no breath, there's no ruach, there's the hope is gone, the strength is gone, the life is gone. And in fact, we see that there's a time in Scripture when there will be a future Pharaoh that arises that brings pain and difficulty on the earth. Revelation chapter 12 describes how that future Pharaoh kind of figure will go after Jews. He will go after Messianic believers, as well as what Revelation calls the other children of the Jewish woman. I think in context that can most appropriately apply to the nations, to Gentile believers, as we'd say, Christians. Revelation talks about how they are hidden, they're pursued and chased. And at the same time, there can be some protection. As the evil one turns up the difficulty, so it is that God's compassion is strengthened and poured out in new ways for us. Rabbi Paul found, as he said, that God's grace is sufficient. He's saying that in a context of struggle, in a context of, of feeling harassed and pursued doesn't mean that the pursuing goes away necessarily. It means that there is protection that is provided. When the enemy comes in like a flood, God raises up a standard against it, Isaiah says. Ultimately, in the book of Revelation, there are what we'd call martyrs, people that have to witness. By the way, the word martyr means witness. They have to give witness to the holiness of God's name, to the point that it leads to their death. And so very much, and in a very real way, the book of Revelation, Rod touched on this last week also, the book of Revelation is another Passover story. The kingdom of heaven contending with the kingdom of darkness over the life of God's people. And then we have ultimately at the end of the book of Revelation, it's like an Exodus story and an entrance into the new land, entrance into the new inheritance. There's struggle and there's difficulty. Amazingly, we're told in both Revelation, Rabbi Paul mentions it too, that God's strength within us is made perfect in our weakness. It goes farther to state that Messiah's suffering is made fuller by our participation in that. We're told bluntly that there's going to be suffering. There was suffering for Israel in the land of Egypt, their diminished spirit, their chotzer ruach, their shortness of breath and spirit, out searching for straw, still driven and compelled to produce the same. A life of exhaustion, a life of suffering. What is it that's going to turn that around? What makes the difference? Where does it swing? How will it happen? In Exodus chapter 12, we have the answer. And I'm not going to ask because you all know the answer already. But let's see how this unfolds. What is it that will bring scattered people back together? What will cause worship to return? The answer is one and the same, and it's in Exodus chapter 12. Verse 3, it says, "Speak to the entire congregation or assembly of Israel, saying, on the 10th day of this month, they shall take for themselves, each person, a lamb or a kid, a goat, for each house, a lamb or a kid per household." And then this great thing about connecting with your neighbors. If your household's too small to eat so much at once, invite your neighbors over. Connect with others. I love the way that some of you connected with each other in order to observe Passover. There's something unique going on in this passage. It says, speak to the entire congregation of Israel. This is the first place in the Bible, not just in the Passover story, but the first place in the entire Bible that the word congregation or assembly is used. The word in Hebrew is adat. Adat. In fact, one of the other synagogues in town is called Adath Israel. TH on the end of a dot with the due to the softer pronunciation of the letter Tav. The community of Israel, the congregation of Israel. And that's the phrase that occurs here. Adat Yisrael. Speak to Adat Yisrael, the congregation of Israel. And what is the message? The message is about the Passover lamb. The message is about how to select and prepare and eat the Passover lamb. Just like in the Passover Seder, there's more time spent talking about food than actually eating food. That's why our Passover Seders can be so long sometimes. There's a lot to talk about in the food. What is it that creates and establishes community once again? What makes a dot? It's the Passover lamb. I have an illustration. I want to thank a lady who used to be on staff with our congregation, a lady named Charlene. Some of you know her. She helped me make this, but so here we have a couple dots. It's just a dot. They're random dots just sitting there. Not necessarily in connected relationship with one another. A dot here and a dot there. The way things happen when the focus is on our diminished spirit, our struggle, our weakness, when we're forgetting about how God's grace is present even in the midst of the difficulty. As Paul said, your grace is sufficient for me. Your strength is made perfect in my weakness. And we can feel like we're just a couple dots sitting there, disconnected, not having significance related to each other. You see, that's really a problem, because when we feel weak, when we feel diminished, when we feel like we're suffering, when we, dare I say, when we even feel like we have, what was it? Shlicha, I lost my clip. I came unclipped. Okay, where was I? When we lose that sense of God's protection, when we lose an awareness that His mercy and His compassion is sufficient, when we see the suffering instead of seeing the Most High in the midst of it, when we end up with the shortness of spirit, when we end up with asthma of the heart, asthma of our spirit, we find ourselves separated. Just this week, I heard that a new poll was released by Gallup polls that said attendance in worship services in the United States across all denominations, religions, regions, worship attendance is at the lowest point since they've been doing this sort of poll for like 100 years. There's been other times in our history that religious attendance has been low. Believe it or not, even during the Revolutionary period, worship attendance in congregations was extremely low. But when we feel pressure, we scatter. When we feel stressed, we scatter. When we suffer, we scatter. And that's what Israel has done in the Exodus story. I wonder, did Israel even know that what Moses and Pharaoh were doing in this contention for their sake in the plagues? Israel obviously knows the plagues are happening because it says that they had light, for instance. They were protected from the plagues, from that one big frog that sat on Egypt. I gotta highlight this. It's too much fun. In the plagues, the 10 plagues, one of them is Sephardea, which we translate, in your Bible, it will translate frogs. But Sephardea is actually singular. And there's a fun story that says it was actually just a frog, one giant frog, sat on Egypt. And if that's not a humorous plague, crazy plague, I don't know what is. And these plagues went on, obviously, for a really long time. We're not told exactly in the text. Perhaps as long as a year. Does Israel know in their suffering? They're scattered. They don't know how God is working to bring release. They're just scattered dots. But what is it that will bring the dots back together? What brings the dots back together to create a dot? The word congregation in Hebrew. Pardon my pun. Dot, D-O-T, and a dot, the Hebrew word. It's the Passover lamb. The Passover lamb is what establishes community and brings the dots back together so that they're connected again. It's not just random dots, but there's meaning and significance to polka dots. What is it in the book of Exodus that made scattered dots come together in once again into something that was whole, like a pattern of polka dots. It was the Passover lamb. The Passover lamb forms community. For the first time, the word community is used in the Bible. And what is it that makes community? It's the Passover lamb. What is the world missing today? The world is missing the Passover lamb. What is it that we need when we're facing the struggle and the shortness of spirit? We need an understanding of the Passover lamb. We need our eyes focused on the Passover lamb. It's the Passover lamb that establishes the very first community of God's people in the Bible. Exodus chapter 12, verse 3. Oh, but it gets beautiful, even more beautiful. Look down in the same chapter at verse 25 through verse 28. It states, "It shall be that when you come..." Is this the right passage? Okay. "It shall be when you come to the land the Lord will give you, as he has spoken, that you will observe this service," meaning Passover. "And it will be that when your children will say to you, 'What is this service to you?' that you will say this: 'It is a Passover feast offering to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but he saved our households.'" And when the people heard that, look at this in verse 27. What did they do? "The people bowed their heads and they worshiped." The Hebrew could once again also be translated, "they prostrated themselves." The people bowed their heads and they prostrated and they worshiped. Worship is back in the story. Worship, the last time worship shows up is that passage back in chapter 4. Before they were scattered, before the dots went off and were disconnected. What is it that brings them back together? It's the Passover lamb. What is it that renews worship in their lives? It's the Passover lamb. As it says, "You will tell them, 'This is the Passover feast offering to the Lord, who saved our households.'" And on hearing this, Israel worshiped again. Passover renews worship. Passover establishes community. Passover lifts the shortness of breath, the weary spirits. It's the Passover lamb, the good news of the Passover lamb. Messiah Yeshua, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed for us. He forms us into community with each other, to relate to each other in our various struggles and difficulties. He forms us into community so that we can worship together once again. He makes worship possible. It's all based on Passover, and it's because of the Passover lamb. Messiah is our Passover. Our lamb that died on Passover to give us life. Do you note that they have victory? They have overcome, which is also Revelation language in chapter 2 and 3 of Revelation. Those who have victory. And they sing the song of Moses, and they sing the song of the Lamb. Great and marvelous are your works, Lord. Just and true are your ways. You are King of the ages. For you alone are holy. All nations will come and worship. How can they come and worship? Because there is one standing by the throne who is a lamb as if he has been slain, we're told elsewhere in Revelation. The nations will come and worship, for your judgments have been made manifest. Revelation uses the word lamb more than any other book of the New Covenant Scriptures. In fact, I think it might, I forget precisely, it might almost be Revelation uses the word lamb more than the whole rest of the Messianic writings put together. Revelation is the book about the lamb, the Passover lamb who creates victory and worship, as we see even right here in this Revelation passage. I just wanted to take this forward into the Besorah and show how this theme of the Lamb bringing victory, release, community, and worship flows into the Messianic writings as well. Passover is powerful, and it's the reason it's my favorite holiday. There is so much strength that we have because of the Passover, because of the Passover lamb in our lives. I pray that you will be encouraged and strengthened and challenged and to take hold of the Passover lamb as we're now counting up to Shavuot, the next Jewish holiday. Draw close to Yeshua. Find new community with people that are put in community that is established because of the Lamb. And then finally, third, discover new worship. The Lamb makes it possible because of Passover.